is the Kevin Shi Show.
Welcome to another episode of the Kevin Shi Show. Happy New Year. This is 2021, and we begin this new year with a series of podcasts regarding Western technology companies and Chinese tech companies, the differences, how they start up, mostly focus on Chinese tech, how they start up and how they're similar to the Western techs and what we can learn from them as entrepreneurs. I'll be speaking with my co-host and friend, Scott Jensen, and we'll be discussing about various issues from Taobao to Alibaba to Meituan, all these unique models that we haven't really heard of in the West. Stay tuned. It'll be like a 5-6 part series. It'll be part of a book that I'm coming out in Amazon probably in mid the summer of 2021. So stay tuned, guys. Thank you. Hi, welcome to another episode of the Kevin Shi Show. I'm your host, Kevin Shi. My co-host today, Scott Jensen. Scott, it's been a while. How have you been? Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you as well. I'm doing well. Yeah. Things are a little different than last year this time for us here, but overall, I think we're in pretty good shape. How about you?
I'm okay. We're still in lockdown in Hong Kong right now. I think we're turning the corner with a new vaccine and cases are slowly dropping. And last time we talked, I was in Europe. We're talking about the problems of COVID and how it affects the economy in the world permanently. I guess both of us didn't expect, or did we expect, this COVID to be as resilient or as strong as it is now? It's been, almost 4 months, and it's only gotten worse. Are you surprised?
I think I've been more surprised about humanity's reaction to it, or the poor reaction to it, and how poorly that we've done as a society and protecting some of the more vulnerable parts of our population. I think that's been more of a surprise. But looking back at history, about every 100 years, something like this kind of comes along and kind of seeks its revenge on the planet. So from that standpoint, I'm not super surprised, but that we're not more caring and compassionate as a race, that's been more of a surprise to me at this point.
Do you think this COVID will be like a spring, like a elastic spring, a spring where we're all compressed so much that there's three factors. One, there's unlimited printing of money. So much forced technology improvement the last years because everybody's going online. All these big tech is getting so much money because of stock valuations. So there's a lot of breakthroughs in technology and even in medical fields. And third, people are stuck at home for so long. Once this COVID is gone, you think it's going to create a new roaring 20s, like 100 years ago. You know, people are going to spend like crazy. The economy is going to go booming. And there's so many new tech there. It's going to make humanity much, much better in 10 years. Do you think that is the recipe for that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that there are cases where that will absolutely be what happens. And then I think there are going to be situations in which the opposite that happens. And I'm curious on what you think about this as well. But quick, two points on that. One would be, I think that COVID has accelerated the pace of what was already going to happen in a lot of ways. Yeah. So greater collaboration on some things. I think businesses working together to solve problems, especially when you look at pharmaceutical technology, when you look at some business sales technology, those type of things have accelerated in this case. If you're looking at home delivery of food and other services like that, that's definitely accelerated. I think there are cases though where people are going to be hesitant to get back out and do something so that this has become the new norm. I don't know that people are going to go back to movie theaters in the same way that they were before. I think a lot of people spent a lot of money on building up their home theaters or buying new TVs and systems. And they kind of like that experience, realizing that some of the experiences that we were doing before just weren't very good. I used to jump on a plane to go to a single meeting, and I'd be gone overnight and I'd be away from my family and kids. And what I found is, and kind of suspected this all along, I didn't need to be doing that. And I think this has accelerated that as well. Do you see it that same way? Or do you think that there are absolutely cases where it's going to accelerate?
I think this travel will definitely decrease because if the objective is to make the deal done, then you don't need to travel. But having said that, I think leisure travel is going to come back with a vengeance because people have been holding it back for such a long time that at least the next few years is going to spring a lot of like leisure travel or destination travel. That's my take on it. Movie theater, I don't know, but I think even office use, I think interestingly right now there's a solution in New York City, and I am always encouraging in Hong Kong. Prime office area, some places are so vacant. Why don't you make it into residential? Because a lot of people would like to live close to the city center. First, it's in the suburbs or the outskirts, makes make more
grade A or grade B offices because everybody's working from home. It's cheaper for them to work there than to go to the city's town center. So I think it'll be like a mix of both coming soon. A lot of changes.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think that absolutely. You and I both have invested in and worked in real estate for some time and an office space. I've had a couple different stints in, and I do think that you're going to see a lot of transformation of kind of what were commercial spaces into residential spaces. I think that's one area for sure. You kind of mentioned we haven't talked a ton recently about some of the stuff. What kind of the things are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on now. I'm learning to play net the NASDAQ. So I'm stuck at home. I went on this crazy trip where I was with you last time in Portugal, and then now Europe is so much COVID, and then now they restrict the rule. Anybody coming back from anywhere except China, mandatory 21 days quarantine in a hotel, right? So there's no more chances of me going anywhere anymore. And since most restaurants and bars are closed, I'm just at home. So I've been taking a few online courses with my friends on playing the stock market, like, you know, technical analysis, the chart reading, the candlestick and all that. At first, it was just, you know, out of curiosity, and I lost quite a bit of money in March, but I got better at it. I guess a bull market makes everybody looks very good. So I haven't seen a bear market, right? So I can't declare myself an expert until I've been through a full bear bull. So but it's getting interesting. And we have a core group of friends doing it. And they're doing really, really well. They're averaging around 4% per month. And this recent crash that we have in NASDAQ, they're 2 days prior, they're 100% completely out on cash. So much for me to learn. Business is, I'm just still doing storage. Business is a bit stagnant. I mean, we're doing okay. We're doing this hybrid model where we have shops and people come in and pick up their stuff. And we just move into a central location, like a mothership and a hub thing. It's not growing very well. So it's not growing a lot, but still growing. So I'm just there. And my business has been around for 20 years. So it's not much pressure on me, my staff here. I go to work 2 days a week. Not bad. So today we have an interesting topic. Let's get onto the topic about the big tech, Alibaba, Tencent, Google, PayPal, and Facebook. You want to start the conversation?
Yeah, I guess I would start with the question to you is that I think that the thing that you and I go back and forth on is a lot is you have a unique perspective on the world and that you grew up in Hong Kong and then you spent a significant amount of time in the West, both in Canada and the States, and you've traveled around a fair amount. And now you're back in Hong Kong and there's been quite a few changes there just recently since China kind of coming in stronger than they have before. And I'm curious, have you having used Alibaba and Google and Facebook for a number of different purposes, both personal and business specifically, what do you see the differences between those systems right now? And Alibaba is a little bit more integrated when you're talking about as a platform and having payment service, plus you have some social pieces and some communication pieces there, whereas Facebook's tried that a little bit. They don't have all the, it's not quite as comprehensive. How do you as a business operator view those things as being different?
Well, okay, a few platforms. Alibaba, I don't use that much in Hong Kong because it's mostly e-commerce, and Ant is for the payment service in China. So we're very outdated. We don't really use that in Hong Kong, but most of my friends or my staff in China uses it. It's very, very extensive. It's like Tencent. I mean, they're in everywhere. You know, you put a shop online like Amazon. Alibaba is like Amazon, right? You put a shop online and they deliver and they do logistic and payment for you. The government's stepping in the regulations because they're getting too big. And this is the difference between U.S. and Hong Kong, I guess, and China, because in the States, you have these antitrust, you know, hearings and everything. In China, you just step right in. Oh, no, you're not doing that. Or they just take your CEO and go for a labor camp reform for 2 months. Tencent is mostly video games, right? Yeah. And even video games, the government has to say, if the game is so successful, it becomes addictive, they pull the plug. The kids are too addicted to your game. You have to stop it now. So how do I say? Again, it's a difference between the East and the West. I think in here, they control these companies. We have a saying, don't ever expect you're the owner of these companies, right? You're just a caretaker for the CCP, for the Communist Party. You do well, you know, you can earn more than your fair shares. But at the end of the day, you know, it belongs to the CCP, right? Right? That's what they say. But it's good in the sense it would control the conflict in the society and it would not get out of hand. Like, for example, like what I see in the West, how Facebook and Twitter is enabling, you know, the other side to make crazy delays and all that, and nobody stops them. And then it just infumes the society into left and right and very a lot of conflicts. In China, they use these platforms to make the citizen believe in the same view as the party. You may say it's brainwashing, but it creates moral stability and harmony. So I guess it's good and bad in both ways.
Interesting. So there's two or three different things I want to kind of explore with you there. First is, let's go back to the antitrust piece. And you're right, there are antitrust laws in the U.S. And I'm not an attorney. I only almost went to law school. But mm-hmm. I do study this a fair amount. And there's some misconceptions here about antitrust. At least in the States, mm-hmm. it's not illegal for a company to have a monopoly. It's illegal for them to use that to their advantage. And I think that's where some of the suits against Facebook and Google and others that are coming out, and everybody kind of assumes that there will be more to come along those lines. In China, there's still got to be a legal premise for shutting down or for breaking up a company. You've got Alibaba for sure and Jack Ma that is going through some of this right now. What is the reason given beyond just this is what we're going to do?
Well, okay. Ant, you know, Ant Financial, the arm of Alibaba, for example, right? Financial, you heard of that app?
Yes, yes.
It was supposed to be big deal in the world, like even bigger than the Americo one, but then they stopped it because Jack Ma was making fun of the Communist Party about how the banking system was so outdated, right? So that's the surface. But on a deeper level, Ant Financial is you pay your stuff with the Ant app on like any e-commerce stuff. And once they have enough data for you, they can just lend you money based on their prediction of your credit worthiness, right? So no collateral, nothing, right? So it's getting very big, and it's so easy to use, right? It's embedded, right? And this is the thing. In China, all the top four or five banks, they employ probably around 500,000 people, right? And their service and revenue is probably about the same as Ant. And Ant only has across the entire world, it only has like 500 people. Right. So these technologies already there to disrupt the entire society. Like if Ant gets its way, then all these bank will be dinosaurs and will live on subsidies, or 500,000 people will be unemployed. So I think the Chinese the CCP is trying to reduce or at least delay the process of this new technology from displacing people. Right. So that's number one. And number two is you have to collaborate with the government. You cannot do your own thing. Recently, they just made a law last month, and I was telling you earlier, for hotel travel sites, you cannot use data to speculate the elasticity or the demand side of the buyer and put different pricing. Imagine that. I mean, imagine bookings.com doesn't have that function. How much revenue would they lose? The government is realizing the power of these big tech that they're moving ferociously. And I don't really think they're starting to probe right now their capability of the power, but they haven't announced any results yet. So there's no any fixed rules. So the basic thing is that they've gotten too big and they want to regulate it. So right now, no more dynamic pricing for hotels and for like these IPO for these financial companies. They need to apply proper license. They're trying to give more breathing room for these old financial industries to transition, I guess. Yeah.
It's really interesting. There's a bunch to explore there, but I want to go back to a comment that you made earlier in regards to the difference between China and the U.S. and it comes to using media to educate the population. And I'm wondering your thoughts on, you use the comment that some may call it kind of brainwashing or suppression. I think there's a different way to say that though. Not say it. I think there's a different way to think about that, which is, I think there's this idea of culturalism where people think that their culture is the best regardless, right? And I think there's probably an idea around there that says all cultures have good and bad aspects to them, right? And you and I have talked about this a little bit, that that China and the U.S. are going head to head right now. And in a lot of ways, China's beating the United States because it has a 40-year plan where the U.S. has a 4-year plan. It's like going to a boxing match without any gloves and your legs tied together and one arm tied behind your back. There isn't a chance. Yeah. Somebody's thinking that long term, that's that way. But from a culture standpoint, and you have again, a unique perspective and I've lived in several different countries and traveled around a fair amount, but you also know that when you go someplace, there's kind of a cultural shock, something you have to get used to living in a new place. And it's part of the fun of it, but it's also can be really hard. What do you think the advantages of the Chinese cultural system around business provides it versus, say, the West, U.S. and Canada that you've had experience? Where are you seeing those differences at and the advantages there?
The advantage of China right now is enclosed in a sense that if you have something good, like a technology or something like that, we are like, we're pretty much protected from outside competition. And you know that, right? Americans have been complaining that they can't get into China market for a long time. We don't need it. We're bigger. We have more people than US and Europe combined, right? We have four, I read somewhere, we have four times more university educated people than in the United States, right? So even internally, they can feel the growth. Obviously, you have to be supported by the government, or you have to be in industries where the government supports you, right? So that's an advantage. And I also, this is a bit a political thing. I think the U.S. is really afraid that China is going to succeed versus if another country, just say if the U.K. or Germany succeeded, they would not feel as much of a threat. And I believe it's because of the, so I guess, you know, the U.S. came from U.K. and the U.K. tried to take over, and then you guys declare independence. And then in the 60s, you guys had the Cold War with Russia where, you know, they want to export communism. Imagine China succeeded and there's voices in America that says maybe communism isn't that bad. That's like the worst thing that could happen in America, where, you know, freedom is the core ideal. In that sense, I think that's why they're so trying to suppress China, because, and I don't think China is trying to overtake US and, you know, control anybody. They just want to do well for themselves. But I think that's the number one reason why US is so out there to make sure China's model doesn't succeed, because if China's model succeeds, is a threat to the democratic movement, which I think both have its, you know, have its places, right? So that's my thinking. I grew up in the West. For me, I think in China it's much harder to do business because people are willing to risk much more than me and you. Most entrepreneurs in China, going to jail is part of the cost of success. Would you and me risk it? If you raise money in China and you're a nobody, You would personally sign a guaranteed loan to the investor. If I fail, I'll pay you back within my lifetime. That's how risk taking they are. So there's a lot of places we won't go there, man. There's a saying by one of my friends in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong is a conservatory. You can still fight for free competition, but there are rules and guidelines you cannot go beyond. In China, it's a jungle. There's no rules. Okay, people risk going to jail and going bankrupt. That's part of the deal, right? My rich second generation trust fund friends, their business is just a zoo. Whatever they do have no impact to society. It's just for show for their parents and their friends. America, you think it's a conservatory jungle? More of a conservatory, right? There are rules you can't break, right?
There's some differences there. You have bankruptcy laws, right? So in the States and in Canada, there's some bankruptcy protections, and it's another version of a social safety net where it enables people to start businesses and go out and try something and not necessarily ruin them for life. They might be set back for several years if they default on their loans or on their bills, but it doesn't necessarily have to be kind of personal. Now you still have kind of personal guarantees for some things and you can't do that, but bankruptcy laws are set up specifically to help, or they have been kind of morphed and amalgamated over the years to help kind of foster that piece there. I guess I'm curious, you're starting to see now there's some changes to Alibaba and what's happening there. I think that Facebook's going to probably end up getting broken up to some degree. I think there's enough pressure from kind of both sides of political spectrum here, the Democrats and Republicans, that Facebook is going to get some pressure there. Google's probably not far behind that. Who knows what will happen to Apple and to Amazon. I'm curious your perspective. What do you think that's going to do to your business, breaking those up?
Good, man. I mean, you know Google, right? Once they know how much you make, they just incrementally go up. Stop the Google inflation, you know, stop the Facebook inflation, right? Competition is good for us. You agree?
I absolutely agree.
Remember how we used to talk about, like, you know, before, like if you owns a hotel, they would charge you just for the link, like the click-through rate, right? And then once they know how much you make, these boxes on their Google, oh, how many days are you planning to stay? And then they start charging you per day that you're staying through that link, you know? The platform, the thing I want to bring up is after this COVID, platforms are getting stronger unless the government steps in. Because take Airbnb versus Marriott, for example. Marriott or a hotel in Vegas, they have thousands of employees. They have rents and mortgages to service, right? Versus Airbnb or even bookings.com. I would say 70% of their fees are variable costs. Maybe they have freelance workers, programmers. And then everything is just advertising. Like everything is variable, right? So they didn't really suffer that much during this downturn, and they have more energy and resources to go up the next term, right? So having said, these platforms are getting more and more powerful. And unless the government steps in and break them up, they're going to control everything. You agree?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the 2 points on that one is, one is the platforms, and Airbnb obviously just went public and or IPO'd, and I think they even were a little bit surprised about how well that went, and probably kicking themselves to some degree, thinking that they left money on the table in a big way. And I agree that their structure and has helped that up. You and I haven't talked about this a lot, and it's there's another point after this I want to make, but I'm wondering if you're thinking about, because you've owned self-storage for a while, mine's mostly now through REITs and those kind of things, but are you thinking about an Airbnb type model? And you and I've kind of talked about a model like this, only in a slightly different version, but are you thinking about opportunities to maybe replicate the Airbnb model for self-storage?
That like Chuck, our good friend Chuck.
Yeah.
Right. Hong Kong for a market for to sustain a platform, and for me to expand to Asia's and all that. Maybe not right now. I mean, it's more of a personal issue. I'm not kind of devoted to invest that much amount to programmers and advertising and brand right now. The risk and reward doesn't pay off. I mean, like even if it's successful for me, it doesn't really change my life. But if I lose it, is a big factor for me. So, but having said that, I think platforms gonna win. You know, if I were to say, if it's not my money, I'm just a fund manager, I would definitely invest in platforms. Brick and mortar, I mean, they don't control the customers, right? So, and the obvious thing is, they didn't lose during this downturn. I mean, most of them just, you know, downsized their freelance, and they just, you know, stopped their advertising, and they're here. Versus I've seen so many foreclosures for properties and, you know, restaurants being closed off because they have too many staff. I don't know. Well, you think like the platform that gonna get more and more powerful unless the government steps in?
To me, this is an interesting question in that to me, it's the financial structure of the organization. And you hit the head, right? So the Airbnbs, VRBOs of the world don't have they're not asset heavy, right? They're more technology companies than in some cases, like the Googles of the world. They have more engineers per capita than other companies, right?
Yes.
Now they don't own assets, which there comes a time in that owning assets is a benefit, right? There's certain times in how the economy moves and shakes that owning an asset absolutely becomes a bench. And the taxation laws are set up for that benefit in a lot of ways, right? So I think that there's some advantages and disadvantages, but I do think we're going to see more companies that are financially structured like Airbnb to enable more participation in those markets and in that business type. I'm really curious to see how that works. I'll follow up with my second point here about this is that I think that breaking these companies up, the Facebooks, Alibabas, PayPal's not it, but Googles of the world, is good for just about everybody from a couple of standpoints. One, from an investor standpoint, I think if you were to break Instagram out of Facebook, it has a lot more value. I think that the value is suppressed being inside of Facebook. Google the same way. If you were to break YouTube out of Google, the value would instantly go up. So that's one that I think is very helpful. Two is I think that the competition is being stifled in a lot of ways. Like we haven't seen really any, the agencies that I own and work with, we have been talking a lot recently. We haven't seen a lot of new innovation when it comes to advertising products. Some of the stuff that still seems like it's like the new stuff is 4 or 5 years old. I think breaking up those would create some competition. If you took YouTube out of Google, I guarantee they would come up with a better search engine right away. And Facebook would come up with a video platform right away. They see the value there. And that, I think, is better for the market overall is because more competition. Because right now, I'm in the process of starting some new businesses, and the first thing we look at is what's the exit going to be from a financial standpoint or from a business modeling standpoint, not from a product standpoint. And the clear path is let's get bought up by either Google or Facebook or Microsoft, because that's kind of the path we're going towards. Are you seeing something different?
Yes, and also I want to ask you, as an agency that you were running before, if you're complaining to them like, you know, oh, you know, you should do this, 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 and then they're like, what other choice do you have? And, you know, you most likely you're going to come back, you're pretty speechless, because if you don't advertise in Google, you know, Facebook is not the alternative. So I think having more choices for consumer is much better, you know?
Yeah, I think all the way around. I mean, there is a lawsuit now that's against both Google and Facebook for their collaboration on stuff. And it's pretty evident to anybody who's working in that space to see Facebook absolutely has a large segment of the population kind of as they're starting to think about ideas and kind of top of funnel. Google helps move them through the funnel, and then they get towards the bottom, and there's a few more options down towards the bottom of the funnel, depending on if you're looking at B2B versus B2C. I think you're seeing some of that with Amazon and being pushed a little bit by Shopify, which I think is doing a decent job. So yeah, I think that there's some room there for more competition. It's going to make some people's jobs a lot harder, but it's going to make the businesses that I've been in and agencies a lot more valuable too.
Do you think the U.S.-China conflict is going to create two completely different systems? I mean, I heard people like hiring staff right now to start learning how to use Huawei phone and to use alternative to the Microsoft Windows, because in 5 years in Hong Kong, we may not even be able to use Microsoft Windows. It's a bit far-fetched, but it's a possibility. What do you think?
I think it's absolutely the realm of possibility. I don't know that I'm confident enough to give it a probability. And maybe you do, whether it's a 30% chance or a 70% chance, it's probably somewhere in between there. But I absolutely think it's a possibility, not necessarily a probability. I'll be curious to see. You are right in that the advantage that the United States has had is that it's roughly half the size of Europe, but it's one country versus 28, almost 30 there, right? And so it's one big market that it allows a company to kind of start up and grow until it has enough acumen and capital and resources that it can start to expand. China's becoming the same way, right? Where it start up and then grow within that before trying to expand beyond that. I'm looking forward to seeing some China developed companies, and you're seeing a little bit like TikTok that start in China and that are growing, but companies that have that are more far reaching than say entertainment to expand beyond that. Do you have any predictions on what some of those companies might be?
Oh, I need to read that book that my friend gave me. Yeah, my friend, a consultant for all these new China companies. There's many of them. Like a lot of them are copycats of U.S. tech, but I think they've gotten to the point where they've gotten better because we just have more people, right? So if a lot of people use it, then it gets better and better and better, right? So one interesting fact that I don't know if you know, in China is very common right now to sell via influencers. So instead of they do a podcast or they show on YouTube and they sell stuff, right? And then they take a cut with the manufacturer of the product, right? And they sell the stuff not because, you know, they're pretty or whatever, because they're expert in that field, like purses, lipsticks, shoes, etc. Do you guys have that in US as well? Influencers, are they important? Are they like a big segment? Because it's a big thing in China right now.
Well, I thought that's why we were doing this podcast, is so that we could start to be influencers and start to sell stuff.
So the point I want to make is the top 10 influencers in China, they bring in revenue equals more than the top shopping malls in China. One guy, you know, doing one month, like, I don't know, five, six. So where do you think the value is? Is the value in the property, or is the value connection with the mass? All right. So going forward, I think you have personal branding is very important. You know, people got to know you. Your company branding is important beyond Google or Facebook, because if people don't know you or you don't have the last line of interaction with your customers, then you'll be dominated by the platforms. Right. So that's a very interesting segment in China. So there's a lot of there's a big industry right now. There's like training schools and all that. For these, there's this guy in China who all he does is put on lipsticks. He sells more lipstick than some shopping malls combined. So it's very interesting.
I think that we're in that, I guess to go full circle here back to the very first of this conversation, and then we'll finish with our final thoughts here. But I think the pandemic has accelerated some aspects of the economy that were going to happen anyway. And I think this is one of them, which is the retail experience has been under attack by the internet for some time. And I think most smart money's been with the internet's going to win this eventually. You're seeing shopping malls close at a quick rate. They're being transformed into office parks or schools or medical parks in a pretty quick fashion. because the experience online is getting so much better that's happening. And I think that will spur or spawn new ways of doing this. And you're seeing that, right? So some influencers and people putting on lipstick or opening up toys or boxes or something like that, you're going to see more of that. And it's going to continue to innovate and change and do that, I think, in a big way and more so. And I think for another topic, when we start talking about, hey, how is VR coming through things, there's some pieces there. But let's save that one for next time or down the road. I guess for final thoughts, I'm curious, you and I talk quite a bit about, hey, living your best life and getting out and exploring the world and seeing things. I know we're in lockdown now, but what's the best thing you've done this week?
This week?
Yeah.
I sold all my stock prior to the crash. let's start with you first.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, as a single dad, there's some things here. And my daughter called me yesterday. The best part of my week this week so far is my daughter called me yesterday after her English class in high school. And we talked about the book Huck Finn for almost a little over an hour, actually. And just to kind of see her have a new perspective on things. And it's a book that there's some controversy around it in regards to, because it deals with issues of race. It deals with issues of class and the economy and some parts of the U.S. history that are kind of ugly or really ugly in a lot of ways. And we had a kind of a really substantive conversation with her for almost an hour about it. To me, seeing her grow up and start to think about the world in a little bit different way than what 17-year-olds typically do was really amazing. Good. That was awesome. It was good.
That's amazing. I think what was the best part of the week? So I've been planning this since last year, but we all got down. I went to class to this guy. He teaches mobile photography. He teaches you how to use the iPhone or the Huawei to take pictures. And he does very, very, very good, like a top notch, and use all these apps. So we've decided to fix the dates to have me and him, our photo gallery in March for charity.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, so if I just put that in, my friends are going to say, oh, you're so lucky. We're all struggling. You have so much free time. So I managed to liaison with a charity. So all the photos that sold will all be donated to the charity. So everybody's clapping hands right now. So we're doing it in March. There'll be a combination of his pictures and my travel pictures. It won't be like me inside like a model. It'll just be like buildings and roads and nature and all that. But it's good. That's something that I've been planning since last year. So, and he's quite famous. So the fact that he's willing to do it with me, I'm pretty happy. So it's my first photo exhibition. I try everything in life.
Kevin, that's fantastic. I mean, for anybody who doesn't know, you travel around quite a bit, and we have been to several places together, and you frequently pull out your drone and are taking pictures and around. Yeah. I'm excited to see it. So maybe in the notes for this this episode, you can post the link for that, because I would like it.
Yeah, we're doing a physical gallery. So I know a co-working space, they're hosting us for free. And then the printing guys give me a big discount, and then all the money will be raised for charity. So it'll be good. I'll be posting the link. But it's been a great talk. I mean, I learned a lot from you, as always, from this talk. Let's continue this. Next week, we'll talk some other stuff, maybe Bitcoin or other stuff or VR.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Talk to you again later.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for listening. For details on this episode, go to kevinshee.com. That's Kevin, SHEE.com.